The Jan Price Show, all about movies.
You're listening to The Jan Price Show, all about movies. And today, my guest is writer, producer, director, Adam Cooper. And we're going to discuss his brand new film entitled Sleeping Dogs. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thanks for having me, Jan.
It's lovely to have you here. Oh, my goodness. All I can say is, wow, wow, wow. Because when I
hope you're talking about the movie.
Yeah, I am. I am talking about the movie. I don't want to give anything away in this movie at all, but I literally, while I was watching it, I just went, oh my God, wow, we didn't see that. Totally. You take us on a ride in this movie, a wonderful ride, and it's so well done. So kudos to you, because I believe this is your first directorial debut, your first film.
It is my first movie, yeah. Thank you for saying all that. That's very kind of you.
You're very welcome. No, and you've done many other things, but we'll get to it. So much. And the stars, Russell Crowe, the always amazing, phenomenal Russell Crowe. So we'll talk about him and his performance and all of that. But just so our audience knows a little bit, do you want to give a nice brief synopsis what Sleeping Dogs is all about?
Yeah, of course. So Sleeping Dogs is based on a book by Romanian thriller author whose name is Io Ciravici, who is writing in English for the first time. And it is the story of a former homicide detective played by Russell Crowe, whose name is Roy Freeman, who is struggling with Alzheimer's, and he's reapproached about a homicide case from the past. He's asked to reinvestigate that case, and it's kind of like he's actually investigating it for the first time, because he has no memory of either the case or the people who were formerly involved with it. So that's what it's about.
In a nutshell, in a brief nutshell. So Russell Crowe's character has a form Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
And so he has volunteered, I guess, for an experimental procedure to be done.
Yeah.
And so bits and pieces of his memory begin to come back throughout the film. So that was interesting. How did that concept come up?
Well, I really liked, I was drawn to this, the theme of memory and the role that memory and the awareness of our past plays in shaping who we are as people and the choices that we make. So having a character who's bereft of memory, I felt like that comes with a real complex kind of humanity. And so him being, somebody who's struggling with Alzheimer's and is undergoing this experimental protocol, it sort of became a device through which we could start to sort of peel back the onion on his character. I liked the idea of there being a mystery that took place in the past. And as the character is unraveling the mystery, he's also unraveling the story of himself. So bits and pieces of his memory coming back are really as much about sort of revealing what's going on with the mystery of the murder took place 10 years ago, as it is really about him discovering who he is. So I liked this idea that this mystery plot, really is a mechanism through which the character learns about who he is himself. And I feel like that's kind of a rare opportunity in film.
It is, and also how other people remember the past too, compared to how we remember it. I mean, how many times have you talked to maybe a friend and that you've known for many years, and they'll recount a story, and you go, "Oh, I don't remember that." You have a good memory that you remembered it.
Yeah.
So there's that aspect to this too, because there's other characters in the film who remember him, obviously completely different than he is today, which helps him a little bit, but he's still trying to grapple with what they're saying about him versus how his own reality is. And those start to spark him a little bit, I thought that was fascinating, the way that you did that.
Well, there's there's a pretty famous quote. I think it's a Marcel Proust quote that goes, remembrances of things past aren't necessarily remembrances of how things really were. And so I think that really speaks to what you're saying. But it's also like, I think we live in a day and age where truth has kind of become a point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And so the opportunity to sort of present that in a mystery film was also really interesting. But I think, what you're saying, what I liked is it puts Russell's character in a vulnerable position, because he doesn't remember, and because he's confronting people who remember him, who he does not remember, he is always at a disadvantage in those scenes. He doesn't know whether those people are friend or foe. He doesn't know if what they're saying about him is true. true or false. So that was all stuff that was fun to get to explore.
And you've got, as I said, one of the best actors alive is Russell Crowe. And, you know, and he just, you know, you don't care what he looks like or what he's doing. He just holds you and your attention and on the screen. I mean, it's just, it's so compelling. And in this role in particular, even more compelling. We haven't seen him in a while in anything recently, so this was kind of nice to see him again on the screen. And how in the world, this is your first time that you've directed, you wrote this script and you produced it. How did you attract Russell Crowe to this wonderful, wonderful part, by the way? It's a great script.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I co-wrote the script with a guy named Bill Collage, and my former agent, a guy named Daniel Cohan, used to work in a previous incarnation as the assistant to Russell's now manager, but then agent. This goes back a long time. Anyway, Daniel was still friendly with Russell's manager and shared it with him. And George Freeman, who's Russell's manager, read it and liked it for Russell and gave it to Russell. And, you know, like a lot of things in this business, you think that that's just lip service. Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it.
Right.
But I was very surprised when I learned that Russell had read the script and liked it. But, you know, it was a long gestating project. I think we optioned the book upon which it's based back in late 2016. And, you know, and so it's a long road. So there are many iterations where you hear that things might happen or are going to happen that then don't happen. And you start to take certain things with a grain of salt. But right. This was pretty linear. His manager gave it to him. He read it. He liked it. We had a phone call. We decided where we were shooting it. And I met him for the first time in pre-production in November of 2022.
Wow. Wow. Now, you shot this in Australia. Now, why did you choose to shoot it there? Because of him? Because that's...
So Russell lives in a place called Nana Glen, which is outside a really cool resort community called Coffs Harbor. And I will get my geography wrong. I think it's a little bit... I don't know if it's south or north of Sydney. I don't remember. But that's where Russell lives. And he'd done a lot of traveling in the year prior, and he really wanted to be at home. So we were deciding between Sydney and Melbourne as the place that we were going to shoot it, and ultimately chose Melbourne because we felt like it had sort of more location variety for us to choose from. But it's kind of funny because the original iteration of the script was set in Pittsburgh in the winter. And we ended up shooting it in Melbourne in the summer.
Oh, dear.
I think we get a lot out of lighting and costumes. I mean, Russell's in a heavy coat and a wool beanie through a lot of the movie. Mm-hmm. And it's not a exterior heavy film where we have to sort of sell weather. But, you know, it was broiling hot.
Was it?
When we were shooting this movie.
I was wondering about that. I mean, I really was, because he does wear that wool beanie throughout the film pretty much. It's almost every scene. I mean, sometimes he takes it off. And I thought, I wonder if they, you know, what time of year they were filming this. Oh, my God.
Yeah, we started shooting in February of 2023, so a year ago. And that was summer. But the funny thing about Melbourne is... you know, there's a New Zealand band that you may know called Crowded House. Mm-hmm. Crowded House has a famous song called Four Seasons in One Day. That song is about Melbourne because that is what you get there. It'll be broiling hot and then it'll rain and then it'll be windy and sunny and then it's hot again. It's crazy.
So was that the toughest part of shooting this film, was the weather? Or were there other parts that were more difficult?
Well, again, because we weren't outside very, very much, weather didn't really play such an active role. I think the hard part was, I think here in the States and other places, they shoot a 12-hour day. In Australia, they shoot a 10-hour day. That includes lunch. So you're probably getting like a 9 hour and 15 minute. We frequently felt just kind of up against it time wise. I think it's always or oftentimes time and money are the issues. You never have enough time or enough money to do what you really want to do. We had 30 days to shoot it. But not a day more.
I was going to ask you how long, so that there you answered my question. So how did you feel a little intimidated directing Russell Crowe? This is your first time directing? I mean, you've done many things. I mean, you've been in the industry for a long, long time, mostly as a writer, correct? That's mostly what you've done in the past. So did you feel a little intimidated, you know, working with him?
Yeah, I did. Totally. But Russell's a great, he's got a real collaborative spirit. Everything is in the interests of making everything better. And also I think, a really good, a good partner to have as a first time filmmaker, in that because he's been doing it such a long time, and has so much awareness, camera awareness, awareness around the process, keeping things moving, being economical with time, he would have ideas that were always really helpful, and they always made things better. I would be lying to say that as a first foray into directing, stepping onto a set with Russell Crowe, who's, I believe he's won 2 Academy Awards.
Been nominated for many.
it's definitely intimidating. I describe it as exhilarating, equal parts exciting and terrifying. It's like jumping out of a plane. I would imagine. I haven't done that, but
I have. I have done that. So yes, that's exactly how you describe it. Terrifying and exhilarating.
But like, if I'm being honest, like, Russell Crowe's an amazing actor.
Yes.
There's nothing that I am going to tell him about acting, you know? So I didn't, I had to sort of maintain the story. Right. And made sure that everything that we were doing was ultimately in service of the story that we were trying to tell and how we were trying to tell it. Russell totally got very quickly exactly what we were trying to do and, you know, was totally in service of that. I think his performance is understated while at the same time being really intense, which is a real feat.
It is. You're right. That's what I said. He's so compelling when he's on the screen. And, you know, he just for that reason.
Yeah.
For that reason, it's exactly right. It's very understated, and yet it's riveting in that respect too. So, well, let's talk about the rest of the cast, because you what I read was that you had a little difficult time finding the right actress for the lead female character. So let's talk about that and that process and the wonderful actress that you found to play that character.
Yeah, Karen Gillan is amazing. She's Scottish, but she doesn't play Scottish in the film. I really wanted to sort of cast against type a little bit, and I think that Karen comes with certain preconceptions, given her more comedic pedigree, her time on Doctor Who, Jumanji. She's in blue prosthetic makeup in the Guardians of the Galaxy series. So because it's a character who wears so many masks and is kind of seen largely through the lens of others in this film, I wanted to cast someone where I could sort of subvert expectation around their perceptions of who they were as an actor. And so I think it's a really great dramatic turn for Karen. And she was just a real joy to work with.
There's so many stories within a story in this movie, and that's what takes you. You know, you're going down one road or one path, or then there's, you know, one character's telling you their side of the story, and then, you know, it was real interesting. So this is based on a book originally. So let's talk about that, because that also plays in this film.
Yeah, right. There's so in the film
as a character in itself in a way.
Yeah, so there's a book. There's a fictional book within the actual book, which is called The Book of Mirrors, as written by a Romanian thriller author. His name is Eugene Chiravici, who actually was writing in English for the first time in this book. And we read the book pre-publication, even though it had already sold at auction to be published. We read it before it was published. And the film, I mean, the film really is an adaptation of the book. There are some books that you read where it can feel almost more a transcription, but we really did have to adapt the narrative of the book for another medium, because the book, short of kind of the mystery, the murder that took place in the past, and there being a character in Richard Finn who had written his own book, memoir, if you will, of what transpired in his memory of that event. You know, short of that mystery and the characters associated with it, the way that the narrative unfolds is very, very different. The character that Russell plays in the film, Roy Freeman, he ultimately isn't presented in the book until the last third of the book. Prior to that, there's two other characters. There's a New York-based lit agent who ultimately receives the manuscript, The Book of Mirrors, starts reading it. It ends with the same cliffhanger that it kind of ends within the film. And then that character passes the book off to the second character in the novel, who is a New York investigative journalist who hits a dead end and then finally gives it to the character that Russell plays, this homicide detective. And so we sort of thought that in a story that's about memory, the way to lens it from an adaptation standpoint was to run the whole story through the eyes of a character who is bereft in memory. And so it was a sizable lift as far as adaptations go.
Yes, I can imagine. I mean, because there's so much to it. This does have reminiscent of Christopher Nolan's Memento and several others. So, were you influenced, you know, by that film, and there were others that are along the same line? Were you influenced by those particular movies?
Yeah, for sure. I would cite Alan Parker's Angel Heart, Adrian Lyne's Jacob's Ladder, Shutter Island, Memento, as you mentioned. I think those were all films that thought of. They're all films that have protagonists that are in some way, shape, or form unreliable, right? Mm-hmm. In some cases, anti-heroes, but they're all characters that are having an existential crisis, you know? For sure, I would definitely cite those films as influences.
Yeah, well, they're all wonderful films, but this one is too. It's definitely going to be one of those that people are going to. It's one you want to. After I saw it, I went, "Oh, I really want to watch it again and see." Because the quote I have here is, I think you. Let me just see if I can find that quote again. The quote is that you wanted people to come out of the theater saying, holy F, I didn't see that coming.
I don't know if I said that or not.
But oh, it's in quotes. I don't know. I think it's underneath you in quotes. That's what
If I did say that, then that is true. Yes, it would be cool if people came out of the film and said, holy fuck, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, well, they definitely, we have to bleep that out now. They definitely will come out of it. I mean, as I said, I was just kept going, wow, 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 wow. So, I mean, people, you got to go see this movie for sure, because I know we're just alluding to things, and it's so frustrating not to be, because you don't want to reveal anything more. So we're trying to be careful not to reveal too much in discussing this movie, but there's so many different layers to it, psychological layers and just each character was, you know, you just kind of going, oh, they were all in it for themselves, for their own reasons, and yet, you know, maybe not for their, right. You know. So I love that. I love it when it keeps, you know, a film keeps you guessing all the way through. And then, but this one, I don't want to go any further because I just don't want to reveal anything, Adam. It's really well done, well written, well acted, a true gem. I think it's a film that, you know, even though, it takes you on a ride and a journey, which is what we all want nowadays. You know, we want to, yeah. You know, yes, is it a little dark? Yes. You know, it's about a murder. That's always a little dark, but the way it's done is done in a way that it makes you think. And I think that's what, you know, when you come out of a movie, it's always nice to kind of have a discussion afterwards and you think about it. And I've said this many times on my show for the years. If you just go to a movie and go, oh, well, that was nice, you know, that was it, you know. But if you start continuing to have a conversation about a movie afterwards, I think that is what films are all about. And they can shift you in the way you're thinking. And, you know, each movie is going to be a little bit different, but they certainly can have open us up to some new thinking and new ways of looking at the world a little bit. So, and that's what this film definitely does.
Well, thank you. That is definitely, I hope it does that for other people too.
Great. I know. I think you will, for sure. For sure. What are you working on now? What's your next film?
I'm working on another script right now. It's kind of another story about a character who is in crisis. It's about a woman who is ill and is trying to save her own life. And over the course of the journey in trying to save her own life, she finds out something kind of much bigger. About the world and about humanity. It's kind of an elevated sci-fi piece, but it presents really more like a suspense drama. The elevated sci-fi piece kind of creeps up on you. It's sort of told mosaically, like a movie like Syriana or Traffic or 21 Grams, where you have sort of these individual narrative threads, character threads that you don't really realize how they all come together until you get deeper into the story and those characters start to cross paths and interface with one another. So that's something I'm working on right now. And, you know, with any luck, I'll get to maybe one day direct that. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, I'm also just sort of talking to other people about other things.
Which is good. That's great. So are you still in the writing process with that particular project, or are you finished and now looking for casting? Okay.
I'm in the writing process. I have, you know, actresses in my head, but you know, it has a female British lead. So there's a you know,
lots of wonderful British actresses.
Tons of great British actresses. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I wish you much success with Sleeping Dogs. Where can people see Sleeping Dogs? Adam.
It opens in theaters near you on March 22nd, a week from this coming Friday.
Great.
So, and then after that, on whatever streaming platform it lands on.
Great. Well, I wish you much success. I look forward to having you back on the show with your next project, for sure.
And
people, really go seek out Sleeping Dogs. It's a fun ride. It really is. It's a fascinating, fun ride. And you will be talking about it when the film is over, for sure.
Thanks.
You're welcome, Adam. Lovely having you on the show. To all my wonderful, loyal listeners, your love of film allows me to do what I do. If you want to support me, the best way to do that is to hit the subscribe button on the iHeart Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And of course, on YouTube. Subscribing matters. If you are feeling really compelled, I want to hear from you. Have a burning question, comment, or review? Drop me an email at thejampriceshow.com. Thank you for listening.
The Jan Price Show, all about movies.